This is Your Life, episode 59. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about what I learned about leadership from a fight with my wife. Seriously, Gail and I do fight occasionally, and I've learned a lot from her about conflict resolution. Specifically, in this episode, I want to share five lessons I jotted down from my most recent experience. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. And you can find out more at platformuniversity.com. If you're already a member, be sure and check out this new Backstage Pass segment, which we posted earlier this week. I reviewed Delinda Lane's platform. She's one of our members who submitted her platform for my review, and I recommended 10 specific actions she needs to take to expand her reach and accomplish her goals. And if you're not a member, check us out at platformuniversity.com. I created this unique membership site specifically to help you build your platform bigger and faster than you could on your own. As you may have noticed this last week, the podcast last week, my team and I are starting to adjust the format of the podcast, and I'm committed to constant and never-ending improvement, so I'm always asking myself the questions, how can we make it better? How can we add more value? And as a result of that, I'm going to begin adding something that I'm calling the tip of the week, and this will just be some resource I've found that's helpful in the last week and in the hopes that you'll find it helpful as well. So, last week, I interviewed Amy Porterfield for Platform University, and she's one of the world's leading authorities on Facebook marketing, probably the leading authority. And I've really been focusing on growing my own Facebook presence, and I wanted to see what I could learn from her. And I also knew it would be hugely beneficial to our members. Oh my gosh, she was amazing. She's one of those rare experts who's equally good at strategy and implementation. And I learned so much. In fact, one tip that Amy shared with me literally doubled the number of Facebook likes I was getting. I've tracked it now for a week. It's exactly double of what I had gotten in the previous several weeks. And by the way, it took me about 5 minutes to implement it. But if you want to learn more, let me suggest that you check out Amy's Facebook Influence 2.0 program. And you can find it at fbinfluence.com. There's a link in the show notes. That's not an affiliate link. I'm just simply recommending this because I believe Amy provides the best training available if you want to leverage Facebook to build your platform and grow your business. Okay, so let's dive into our topic for today. What I learned about leadership from a fight with my wife. I still laugh when I say that title. But let me give you a little context. Gail and I have now been married for 35 years. She's my lover, my best friend, and my coach. But a few months ago, we had a fight, and it was a doozy. It's not important what it's about. I don't want to rehearse all that here in this public podcast, but it was one of those issues we've stumbled over previously. But I'll admit, it was my fault. I ambushed her, and I let it escalate beyond what the circumstances warranted. Thankfully, it ended well, and primarily because Gail was patient and refused to react to my rant. This was enough to end what Emerson Eggerichs calls the crazy cycle. And by the way, if you haven't read his book, Love and Respect, you must do so. It's the most practical book on marriage I've ever read. I had all the guys in my mentoring group read it a couple of years ago. Hugely, hugely helpful to all of us. But in this fight, I was tired. I was feeling a little foolish. And we ended up asking one another's forgiveness and we restored the relationship. So it was all good. But as I was reflecting on that experience, I thought to myself, how can we avoid slipping into this same conflict in the future? I don't mind new conflicts, but I hate having the same argument over and over again. Well, I wrote down five lessons I want to remember for the future. And not only they are applicable to your marriage, but I really believe these will be applicable in the work environment with the people that you're leading as well. So again, five lessons. Number one, clarify your expectations up front. You know, most conflicts are born out of a misalignment of expectations. And in this particular argument, I had a set of unexpressed expectations that Gail failed to meet. And if we had discussed them before the day began, we would have likely avoided the problem altogether, but she didn't know because I hadn't bothered to articulate them. Well, this happens in business too. The people we lead can't read our minds, and neither can your colleagues, and neither can your boss. We've got to make our thinking and our expectations visible. Like one of my daughters says to her son when he's frustrated, use your words. We got to make our expectations clear. What do you need? What do you want? When do you want it by? The more clear you can be with your expectations, the less conflict you will experience, the less conflict I will experience. So we've got to clarify our expectations up front. Number two, my second lesson, assume the best about each other. You know, this is especially difficult in the heat of the moment. It's so easy to impute motives, but realistically, your spouse does not get up in the morning intending to make your life miserable. You have to give your spouse the benefit of the doubt and assume that he or she is well-intentioned. Well, the same is true on the job. The people you work with don't get up in the morning thinking about how they can screw up your life. Now, they may not wake up thinking about how they can bless you, but they likely aren't evil either. So before you jump to the conclusion that somebody intentionally offended you, assume, and this is what I try to assume, that other person is smart, they're competent, they want to do a good job, and what I need to say is something like, well, I guess I wasn't clear, let me try again, and then restate my expectations, because I want to assume that they just didn't understand. And if you go through this procedure and the person still doesn't deliver, well, then it's time for a different kind of a talk. But always, always assume the best. I've never gone wrong with this. You know, maybe it drags out the conflict a little bit longer. There may be the occasion, and it's very rare, that I'm abused because I assume someone's motives are good, but it's usually, almost always, the best course of action. So lesson number two, assume the best about each other. Lesson number three, affirm the priority of the relationship. You know, the most important asset you have as a couple is the health of your relationship. Let me say it again. The most important asset you have as a couple is the health of your relationship. It affects your parenting. It affects your job performance. It even affects your health. So when it comes to conflict, you don't want to win the battle, but lose the war. You know, I remember watching an episode of Dr. Phil one time, and he was dealing with this unbelievably stubborn husband who didn't seem to have any empathy for his wife's situation, a situation which he in part created. She was miserable, so was he. But worse, he kept insisting to Dr. Phil that he was right in the particular argument, and he wouldn't budge. Well, finally, in a moment of frustration, Dr. Phil said to him, "Look, you can either be right or you can be happy." I love that. And I mean, it just, you know, finally connected with this guy, and he got it. And of course, the audience went wild and clapped. But I had a similar aha moment in my fight with Gail. And near the end of the argument, I finally came to my senses and I said, "Honestly, I don't know who's right or who is wrong. What I know for sure is that I love you and that trumps everything." Well, she quickly agreed. And I mean, we were both in tears, but it's the priority of the relationship that's important. And the same thing is true at work. The most important asset you have as a team is the health of your relationships. And you've got to constantly affirm this and express it out loud. You know, people can handle just about anything if they know they're loved and accepted. A conflict is like a withdrawal in a bank account. Your relationship can handle it if you've made enough deposits. But if you haven't, you're going to overdraw the account, and that doesn't lead anywhere positive. So you've got to affirm the priority of the relationship and take every opportunity to do that so that when you encounter conflict, your relationship can survive it intact. So lesson number three, affirm the priority of the relationship. Lesson number four, depersonalize the problem. You know, when you square off against one another and make it personal, it gets ugly. If you're not careful, you end up cornering your spouse and leaving them no other option than to react or retaliate. And instead, you have to move to their side of the table, metaphorically speaking, and work on the problem together. And this takes enormous self-awareness and maturity, and it's difficult, but not impossible to do in the heat of the battle. You know, as humans, we're wired for flight or fight. And this is exactly what many couples do when they encounter conflict. When they enter into it, they either get defensive and start attacking, or they shut down and sometimes literally leave the room. And neither of these responses is healthy. And reflect back on your own experience with conflict. My guess is that you've probably been given to one of those or the other. And sometimes in a relationship, one of the parties has a propensity to fight, the other one has a propensity to leave, and it's not healthy. They're natural, by the way, so don't beat yourself up about them. Just determine that you're going to practice a third alternative, which is to objectify the problem, name it if possible, and see if you can enroll your spouse or your coworkers in solving it. It's much easier if you do that. Again, the objective is to get everyone on the same team, on the same side of the table, looking at the problem, using your combined resources to solve it. So lesson number four, depersonalize the problem. Lesson number five, this is so important. Listen more than you talk. You know, when you get angry, or at least I do, it's easy to rant, to give expression to my emotion. And this is almost never a good idea. Instead, if you want to be understood, you must seek to understand. Thank you, Dr. Covey. This means trying to see the other person's point of view. Ask a question and then ask a follow-up question, like you're peeling an onion. And when I shifted to this mode, all kinds of good things happen. First, I keep from embarrassing myself by assuming something that's not true. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten into an argument or a conflict, made an accusation, and then only to find out that I had forgotten the conversation that we had had or an agreement that we had made. And I find that it's often best if I can just ask a question and assume the best on the part of the other person and listen more than I talk. But second, I buy the time I need to cool down when I'm asking questions. I move from defending myself or making someone else wrong to solving the problem. And then third, I widen the context by considering the other person's point of view. And this almost always results in a better solution. I have a narrow, limited view. It's not to be equated with the truth, you know, as though I was seeing everything objectively. You know, it's a limited perspective. And when I invite somebody else into the conversation, my quote, opponent, and get their perspective, I can see it from a wider frame of reference, which almost always leads to a solution that is out of the box or different than what I would have come up with on my own. So again, purpose that you're going to become a master question asker. And warning, I'm not talking about becoming an interrogator. That's an entirely different thing. You don't want to be the Grand Inquisitor. That's not going to work for you, I can promise. But I'm talking about intentionally becoming fascinated with your spouse and with the people you lead. If they're seeing something from a different perspective, that can be helpful to you. You need that information to make the best decisions. You need that perspective to take advantage of the relationship and grow it to the level that'll be mutually satisfying. So, what does a fight with my wife have to do with leadership? As it turns out, everything. If you can't lead yourself, you can't lead others. And if you can't learn to manage conflict with those closest to you, how can you manage it with those who have less of a stake in the outcome? Well, I hope this has been helpful. I'll be back in a minute with our listener Q&A segment. Welcome back. We've got four questions today. The first one comes from Amanda.
Hi, Michael. My name is Amanda Voslow, and I'm calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm very interested in this topic because my husband and I were lucky enough to find jobs together working with students at Methodist University. We often look to each other for accountability, support, and inspiration. My question is, if and when is it appropriate for married couples working in the same field to market and promote themselves together? If it is appropriate, what tips can you provide for doing this successfully? Thank you so much for your time and inspiration.
Amanda, thank you so much for that question. Wow, I don't think I've ever had a question like that before. Certainly, if your relationship is as healthy as you say, and you know, this is something that you bring as a package to the work environment, I do think that could be successfully marketed. I'm not sure it could be successfully marketed in a conventional employment situation. Yeah, you know, you may be able to find that situation, but I don't know too many companies that are that forward thinking. That, I mean, many companies have policies against people from the same family working in the same organization, or sometimes they have a policy that says that one can't report to the other. You know, all this stuff about nepotism. Frankly, I think it can be enormously helpful if it's strategic and if you really think through it and give people permission to talk about the unspeakable when there's problems that come up in the relationship. But I think it might genuinely work in a contract situation where you're selling services kind of in the open market. Then you could market both of you as, you know, sort of two halves of the same coin and why you're better together than you are separate. So I think, again, you know, I'm not sure it gives you a strategic advantage. It might, but I don't really have much more to offer than that, other than congratulations for having such a great relationship with your husband. Awesome. The next question comes from Charles.
Hi, Michael. This is Charles Pobimensa, and I'm from Steubenville, Ohio. I blog about changing the world in the little things that we do at charlespm.com. I'm curious about how you view the leadership role of a husband as different from that of a wife in a marriage. I personally feel that modern society often tries to make husbands and wives' roles the same in the name of equality, as opposed to complementary. What's your opinion, and how can we as husbands become better leaders in our marriages, considering this?
Charles, this is an issue that unfortunately has become very political, and I hate that. And I really haven't studied it enough to give, you know, some sort of, you know, comprehensive theological or philosophical point of view, and I am certainly open to correction on this. All I can tell you is what's worked in our relationship. And I don't know if this is traditional or not, but I tend to be the leader in my family. And I know there are marriages where that's, you know, the opposite situation. Gail is a great follower. She also initiates in many situations, and that's fine too. You know, we don't get all hung up on that. The main thing we want is the best decision, the best perspective. And one of the things that we've learned in our relationship is to appreciate one another's differences. We could not be more opposite. And, you know, there was kind of that thing where when we started that's what attracted us, you know, opposites attract. But then it got annoying because every time I would see something from one perspective, she was completely the opposite perspective. And that just, it grated on us. But then we learned, I think this was like the third phase of our marriage, where we learned that actually our differences were what made us as a couple stronger. It's what gave us a broader context. It's what led to better decisions. It led to a broader perspective. And so now we really try to understand, appreciate, and use that in any kind of situation that we encounter. Just an example, I tend to be more introverted. She tends to be more extroverted. Well, we let that work for us. You know, there are situations where we need to be out among the public to meet people, and she tends to lead in those situations, and I tend to follow. But there are situations where I think we have to pull back from that and tend to the nourishment of our own emotions and our, you know, self-care kind of things. And I tend to lead in that. Or take another situation where I tend to be impulsive about decisions, which means I get to a decision quickly, but often the wrong decision. She, on the other hand, tends to be more thoughtful and consider the options that are out there. That used to really annoy me because I thought, why can't we get to a decision faster? Just make the frickin' decision. She, on the other hand, had the opposite perspective. No, let's wait and consider our options. Well, the truth is, we make the best decisions when we consider the options, but we move to a decision point. So that's how our differences serve us. And I would just encourage you and anybody listening to really assess your differences on that level, and especially with your team at work. Don't see the differences as something that's a liability, but as something that's an asset, and make sure you don't hire people that are just like you, that make decisions in the same way that you make decisions, that think the way you think. If you do, you'll have a weak team. And as somebody once said to me, if we're the same on everything, then one of us is unnecessary. The next question comes from Kevin.
Hi, Michael. This is Kevin Bemmel from Los Angeles, although at the moment I'm stationed at Naval Base Point Loma in San Diego. I blog on entrepreneurship and veterans and living intentionally at Bemmel.com. My question is, what do you see as the differences between leading a business and leading a family? On the face of it, they may seem to be the same, and yet I think there are some significant differences there, and I'd really like to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks so much. Bye.
Kevin, it's hard for me to know exactly what you're driving at without hearing more, because I tend to see them as very similar. The things that I find that work in my marriage, that work in my parenting, also work at work. You know, good leadership is good leadership. You've got to lead yourself. You know, you've got to do all the things that I talked about earlier in the show. That works regardless of the context. Now, the outcomes are admittedly different. You know, when I'm in my business, I'm very much, in my particular business, bottom line focused. You know, the profit's important. An efficient business is important. And not all of those outcomes are important in a family. You know, sometimes the relationships are more important than having the house clean, for example, something that was easy for me, especially in the early days, and still is occasionally, can be a stumbling block for me. I tend to get focused on the task rather than the people involved. But guess what? That also affects me at work. I can get very task-oriented at work to the neglect of the relationships, and it's ultimately not productive in either sphere. So, you know, I'd love to hear more from you on this, and if there's something that I've missed here or some ways that you see that they're different, I'd love to learn from you. So please leave a comment in the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/059, as in episode 59. Can't wait to hear from you. The last question comes from Steve.
Hi, Michael. This is Steve Spillman calling from Travelers Rest, South Carolina. I blog at truepotentialmedia.com. I've followed your blog since 2005, and as a small Christian book publisher, I've been so impressed that the CEO, Thomas Nelson, would actually take the time to blog. You've been a real mentor as we built our company. I'm also impressed that you've included mentions of Gail so much in your public work. My wife, Elaine, and I have been partners in life for more than 30 years and partners in business for 17 years. Keeping business discussions from bleeding into personal feelings can sometimes be a challenge. How do you and Gail discuss and maybe disagree about a business or public matter without letting that discussion affect your personal relationship? Thanks again for the work and effort you put in for all of us.
Steve, thanks for your kind words and great question. You know, here's how I think about it. I'm not saying that this is right, but this is how we think about it as a couple. You know, we don't try to distinguish too much between, you know, work and our personal lives. For us, it's all one seamless whole. And that's particularly true now that I'm working for myself, that I have my own business. You know, they tend to flow one into the other. And the truth is, Gail is my most important confidant. She's my business partner. And so we do talk about business a lot. But one of the things that we're committed to is, because we're committed to our relationship and because we're committed to seeing one another grow, we try to ask questions of the other about things that are non-business related. So I don't know what might work for you. All I can tell you is what works for us. And when there's disagreement, you know, we don't really dig in our heels. You know, we tend to give things time and wait till we get alignment on something before we make a major decision. By the way, this is critically important. You know, for example, I thought Gail should also have an office out of the home, because I found that in the home, she was having a difficult time getting done the things that she wanted to do and move forward on her goals, because she got distracted with stuff related to the house and related to family members. And so I was encouraging her to get an office, but it was not an easy decision for her. She wasn't convinced, and it took her a while. And even though I thought I had the right answer, I intentionally gave her the space to think through it and maybe come up with a different answer. And she ultimately agreed, and she thought that was a good thing. And so now she's almost ready to move into her office, which conveniently is right next door to mine, which is going to be really fun. But at any rate, I just find that I have to give her space. She finds the same thing for me. Neither of us dig our heels in. It's just kind of a way of being, a way that we've developed in our relationship with one another. So hopefully that'll be a little help to you. So now it's your turn. What has your own marriage taught you about leadership? Well, to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/59, as in episode 59, and I'll be back in a minute with some announcements and a final action step for you to take in getting better at conflict resolution. Well, welcome back. I've got a few quick announcements and then a final tip as you work to get better at conflict resolution. Announcement number one, if you're considering launching your own platform or just getting serious about it, you need to start a self-hosted WordPress blog. It's not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I'll walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes, and it's absolutely free. You can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. Then the launch conference for this fall is filling up fast, and I've got a special $200 discount code I'm going to share with you in just a minute. But in case you don't know, Launch is the conference for professional speakers or those who want to be. It's all about the business of public speaking. Specifically, we teach you a powerful four-part framework that enables you to discover your assets, design your products, develop your market, and determine your value. This is the conference that launched me into my professional speaking career. And we're going to be holding the conference on September 16 through 19 in beautiful Vail, Colorado. Great time of year. This is one conference that I promise will pay for itself almost immediately. I paid for mine in the first month after I attended. Well, you can find out more at launchconference.tv. You can use the discount code Hyatt. That's all caps, H-Y-A-T-T, and it'll take $200 off the registration price. But this offer expires on June the 30th, 2013, so you've got to act quickly if you want to take advantage of it. The last announcement is that my next podcast will be on the topic of how do busy leaders find time for social media. You know, whenever I speak on the topic of platform, which is my most popular talk right now, it's the number one question I get. How do I make time for it? And I'm going to talk about a simple strategy for reframing the question so it doesn't feel like you're adding anything to your already overloaded schedule. So if you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it just like I did with the callers in this episode. So now the final tip. Let me leave you with this as you think about managing conflict. While you're at peace, sit down with your spouse or your coworkers and agree on the rules of engagement. Now, I practice five, and they flow directly from what I shared earlier. Number one, clarify expectations. Number two, assume the best. Number three, affirm the relationship. Number four, depersonalize the problem. And number five, listen more than you talk. And I would encourage you to have your teammates listen to this episode and then get together and discuss it. Then you can ask, can we agree on the rules of engagement that Michael shared? And if not, what do we want to add or modify? And I'd love to hear from you how that works out. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. This takes about two clicks, and I'd be so grateful. It'll help me get the word out about the podcast. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com/59, as in episode 59. Go to the show notes for this episode, scroll down to the comment section, and I'd love to hear from you, whether it's a comment, a question, whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is-